Join the chorus. It's time for another North Melbourne Footy Club update with Dean Vasek and special guests on Hashtag Kangaroos.
Hi, this is Ben McKay from the North Melbourne Footy Club, and you're listening to another episode of the Hashtag Kangaroos podcast. Here is your host, Dean.
Thank you, Ben McKay. Welcome to another episode. My name is Dean Vasek. You can find me on Twitter at Hashtag Kangaroos or on Instagram at Hashtag Kangaroos Podcast. So today I welcome another former North Talk regular guest in Siobhan Rowe to get her thoughts on the game Saturday as well as how the club is going as well. We talked about draft prospect in George Wardlaw and what his ceiling could be. Also, the hype of Harley Reid as well, the projected number one pick coming into this year. Is he as good as people say he is? So it's good to get to our draft expert, Siobhan. There's plenty of good talking points with her. I really enjoyed the chat. I'm sure you lovely listeners will as well. So I won't hold you up. Let's bring her on right now.
I have former North Talk regular Siobhan Rowe back on the show again. Now, this is the second time you've been on. Siobhan, I'm sure a lot of listeners will love hearing your voice once again, although you have been struck by COVID, you just told me before, and that's knocked you about for six the last couple of days. But welcome back to Hashtag Kangaroos. Siobhan, we are three rounds in. How have you seen a Clarko era so far?
Hi, Dean. It's an absolute pleasure to be back on the podcast. And yes, I do apologise for my croaky voice. COVID has got me right in time for Easter. But we're just saying off air, nothing that a great North Melbourne performance can't fix up. Yes, it's the first time I've been able to speak ever since Alistair Clarkson took over as coach of our great club. And who would have thought that we would have started the season 2-0, especially that close victory over Frio in Perth. If you'd said that to me at the start of the year, I probably would have laughed at you. But I think the most important and impressive aspect of the last sort of 2 to 3 rounds has been the game plan that Clarko's embedded into the team. It's been really great to watch us play with such a dare and great structure. I've seen the resolve of the group come back. I've loved watching us kind of hunt the player and hunt the ball in ways that I haven't seen for a long time. And it was great to get real reward for effort in the first two rounds. And last week, unfortunately, was a down week. We regained LDU and Simkin for this week, and we'll see how much we do rely on those two fellas out of the middle. But it's been a great start to Clarko's journey as Roos coach, and no more time to kind of show that same resolve and hunt as with the Good Friday game tomorrow.
100%. Would you have taken a 2-1 start of the year? I know you're probably thinking, you know, your first three rounds, if we're going to be 2-1, you lose to Fremantle and you beat Hawthorn, but it went the opposite way. Is it time we start getting more wins now, like after the last couple of lean years, or you still think it's a development year as far as getting games into Will Phillips, Tom Powell, Josh Goder, who we just found out being dropped, and so forth? Or is it a bit of both, you think?
It's a great question, Dean, and something that kind of weighed very heavily on me before the season started, because a lot of people were saying, you know, how many wins for North this year? And I always said that it's not really about wins and losses. It's about improvement in individual players. It's about seeing a game plan be embedded and just watching us play more competitive footy. Clearly, I thought that we would have beaten the Hawks out of the first three rounds and potentially West Coast, which we took care of in round one. But I think if you're constantly playing and not getting any reward for your efforts, it's hard to stay motivated. So the first two wins that we got, I mean, I'm sure Clarko will be looking at that game in Perth and touching on that throughout the year. Obviously, a lot of us aren't deluded enough to think we're going to go into every game and win those games, but it would be nice to see more development in the youth. So we've already seen LDU become an elite mid in the competition in the first kind of back end of last year and early rounds of this year, and continued growth in our youngsters. And I think also really seeing that game plan flourish was another thing there. So it'd be nice to keep winning games, but I also don't want to see us win a few games and then come out and lose by over 100 points. And I think that kind of defeats the purpose of the progress. But in saying that, we are still a young group and there'll be bumps along the way. I think last week was really disappointing because we did come up against a team that I thought were poorer than us, but on the day seemed hungrier than us to win the actual game. I don't know if they were your thoughts as well. But we've got a tough stretch coming up now. And I think it's just about being competitive and watching the young guys take on more responsibility as well.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Hawthorn game soon. Obviously, the Fremantle game was a big bonus, and you talked about game plans and the way we played. It was very similar to Hawthorn, what they did to us. You know, we're very happy to keep possession in the back line, chip it around until we found an opening and broke them open. And getting a fast start really helped, whereas last week we obviously got a slow start and we had to play catch-up. So it's always important to start the games well in saying that. Now, you talked about development. Which players have impressed you so far?
Yeah, there's quite a few. I think one of them that I think has flown under the radar a little bit now, we all love talking about Harry Sheezel and the impact that he's had since coming into the club. I mean, he's played three games of footy and he's probably one of the most composed players on the list, which is just incredible for his career. But I think Cam Zerha's really been one of the shining lights for myself. They highlighted on Fox Footy the other night. I knew he was performing well in that mid-forward role, playing more time in the midfield. But just the numbers are really alarming. When he does go into the middle, we win more clearances than we would if he wasn't there. So just his presence in there and his physicality, I think, makes a real difference. So to see him go from just a goal-kicking forward to now a midfielder that can go forward and kick crucial goals has been really, really impressive. I think the other guy that's really impressed me has been Jack Zeeble. Now, I know a lot of North fans probably were thinking that he wouldn't play a lot of games this year, but just the leadership that he's shown in the back line this year, I think that's probably our most brittle line. And the way he's been playing, I think, has been really impressive. And speaking of leadership, Liam Shields as well. I was very skeptical when we first brought him over from the Hawks, but I think he's played a really pivotal role in steadying the ship at times, also his leadership, and I don't think he's lost any of his skill either. But of course, Harry Sheezel, who we've spoken so much about, and also LDU have been huge, and they're probably the two that, including Nick Larkey as well. I mean, the guy just doesn't miss, does he? He's kicked, 11 goals or 10 goals straight for the season. He's just a reliable forward, and with some better service, we've seen what he can do. So he's another one that stood out to me because he's a rare talent. And fingers crossed, Charlie Comben, who seems to be getting his hands around the ball quite a lot. We can see he's really competitive, very athletic, and lays a lot of tackles for a big man. Hopefully he can start kicking a few more goals as well, because he's almost there. He's got all the pieces of the puzzle. And fingers crossed he can start getting reward for that too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very good point about Charlie Comben. It was a big positive last week, and he plucked a few marks where he sort of dropped them the first couple of rounds. Now, he had a team-high 9 score involvements for the game. Do you think that could be the game that gets his season going now? And it could be. I think he's a bit of a dark horse to kick 3 or 4 tomorrow against Carlton.
I agree, Dean. And nowhere in any way kind of comparing to another guy that we're going to have to deal with tomorrow. But he kind of has the similar traits to Charlie Curnow in that he's a player that is very athletic for his height and can do kind of freakish things we've seen. And absolutely, I think he's been building. I mean, it's easy to forget, and I've certainly jumped to conclusions as well about where he's at, but he's played 4 AFL games. So I think tomorrow is a chance for him to really cement his place as a forward in the team and kick a few goals. Larky obviously takes most of the attention, so he's not getting the best defender. I'm assuming Wiedering will play on Larky. So you're right, Dean. I think he's a good chance to kick a few tomorrow and get us going on the scoreboard.
Yeah, I think the synergy between him and Nick Larkey has been very important. That's allowed Nick Larkey to kick 12 goals. I know his straight kicking helps. I mean, yeah, 12 goals straight. But, you know, just having that extra body rather than, you know, another defender just going off his opponent and making two or three on one. And, yeah, I mean, the game plan is very important. He's getting his one-on-one opportunities. And he's kicked goals against, you know, decent defenders. I mean, you're talking about Mitch McGovern, Tom Barras type of players who are, you know, we're all Australian players and premiership players not that long ago, so they're no mugs. So, yeah, I think he's been really important to the structure of the team. And, yeah, we don't have many other options, so it's important that, you know, I think continuity in his body, getting that going as well. Like you said, he's only played five games now, whereas, you know, we got two games out of him in 2 years because of injuries and so forth. So we can get 18 to 20 games out of him this year. It'll help his development. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about his contract as well. He's going to leave that till a later part of the year, so hopefully he stays around. But, yeah, it'll be interesting if he – like, what would you think would be well, it's on top of my head, is a good contract for him. Let's say he's got 16 games in a row, first 16 rounds, his body's holding up. Would you look to long-term, 3 or 4 years, or would you look at 1 or 2 years just trying to extend him that far?
See, that's a really good point you make, Dean, because we know how much he struggled with his body. So he's had a lot of injuries in his short career, and that's why we haven't quite seen the best of him yet. And it just, if you sign him up to a deal that was 3, 4, 5 years, a deal like that, it would make you kind of think to yourself, if he did break down again, you know, or we've signed him on for a long contract, and whether or not that's the right thing to do. So if I was North, I'd probably sign him up for 2 years and then have maybe like a clause in there where it says if you play a certain amount of games, then it's an instant sort of another 1 year on the contract and more money or whatever it might be. But I probably wouldn't be jumping the gun yet to sign him on a long-term deal. But in saying that, you know, if he does present on the park each week and he starts finally getting reward for his efforts on the ground, on the scoreboard, it makes you think, you know, other clubs are going to be looking at him and certainly offering him big deals as well. So what would you do in that circumstance?
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably want to wait till halfway through the year. We've got a few players at the moment that we want to, like, re-sign. I think Ben McKay's on top of that list right at the moment. Yeah, I mean, he's probably an interesting comparison because he's played 52 games as well. But I think if he wants a 4 or 5 year deal, you kind of just have to bite the bullet. Otherwise, who else are we paying? You know, we're not going to get any, you know, free agents as good as him. So you may as well go long term. I mean, there's got to be risk. And Charlie Comben, if he's showing signs and his body's holding up, look, I'd have no hesitation giving him 3 years because I think he's got the potential to reach a really good ceiling, and that contract might be great value in 3 years' time if he's on, I don't know, $300,000 a year or something like that, and might just give you options to, like, we know Clarkson can get players from other clubs. He's got very good relationships, so it might just give you that option that you might be able to get someone else or something like that. So I'll certainly look at 3 years for him, but obviously if he gets a long-term injury, then you've got to reassess, and I might even just look at a two-year deal or 1 year, one plus one, you know, like, you know, the one-year contract with, if he reaches games next year, you give him an extra year. But, yeah, it's an interesting dilemma. So, yeah, like I said, I think Ben McKay is probably the top, you know, the top priority at the moment. And then we'll look at, yeah, Charlie Comben and a number of other players as well. Like you mentioned, a lot of good players there that have impressed, and I agree with you with all of them. Cameron Zouhar has been very good in the middle. He'll be better this week with LDU and Joy back in the team. Jack Zeebel, yeah, looks a lot better in the back line than he did forward last year. I'm not so sure why they pushed him forward again after having a good 2021 in the back line. And Liam Shields has been a very good on-field coach as well. It's interesting, like, talking to Liam Shields, he's almost talking like this is his last year. This is going to be his last year.
Yeah.
But I think he's only 31 years old. His form hasn't fluctuated from what I've seen from Hawthorn. He seems to be a very good on-field coach and a leader out there. Do you think he could get another year if he keeps his form up?
Absolutely, I do. I think He brings a lot in terms of the on-field coaching side of things that I do think that we still need in the team. Obviously, the North media team this year have done such a great job, and a lot of the fans would have watched the Inner North documentary, and that taught me a lot about why Clarko brought Liam Shields across, just his talk out on the ground and guidance for the young players. But like I mentioned before, and like you said, his actual on-field contribution has been fantastic. So I'd be more than happy to see North sign him up for next year and even the year after, depending on how the development of our other midfielders go. But I found having him across halfback and even on the wing that he's played at times has also been really handy, because I think our midfield is probably our most stocked area. And we're obviously prioritising Tom Powell and Will Phillips and players like that in there over our elder statesmen, if you want to call them that. But he certainly brought a lot to the club, and I wouldn't be against having him around for a few more years.
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar to Luke Hodge. I mean, it looked like he was going to go to Brisbane for, like, I know a different class of player, but it looked like he was only going to go to Brisbane for a short-term thing, but he ended up getting a couple of years out of him. And they got Grant Birchall after that as an on-field coach as well. You mentioned plenty of players that impressed you so far. I have a feeling I know who you're going to name. Which players are you a little disappointed in at the moment?
Yeah, one of them that's really kind of left a sour taste in my mouth, probably Jaden Stevenson. I thought with Alistair Clarkson coming through the doors I didn't think he'd play round one, and Clarkson said to him, you know, Sutton, go out there and show us what you've got. I still think he's a little bit lost. I'm not sure if he's the match winner that we all really hope he is. He plays and he's okay, but I still think that he's leaving a lot out on the ground. I don't know if you agree, Dean, but I'm every week I'm thinking, here's Stevenson's chance, you know, to kick a goal or to lay a tackle or to put some pressure on. And whenever I see him, he's still shirking contests and not quite sort of grabbing a hold of his opportunity. So he's one that I'd like to see more out of. I didn't have really high expectations for Aiden Bonner's sort of career in defence, but I still kind of feel that he's playing in the wrong position. I don't think Aiden Bonner's a bad footballer. I just think he's not a key defender, which we're playing him as. So I can understand why he was dropped after round one. And then, you know, he's playing tomorrow more than likely against Charlie Curnow, which really, really concerns me. But he's another one that I'd like to see some improvement out of. And the other one, I think this will be a bit contentious because he did kick two very important goals against Fremantle in round two, but I'd like to see more out of Curtis Taylor. I think he's another one similar to Stevenson where they're those X-factor sort of players, but I don't think they're consistent enough throughout a game. So you'll see Taylor occasionally and go, you know, he's taken a great mark or had a good moment there, but he's not doing enough for me still. And I think Stevenson and Taylor in particular, if we can just get eke another sort of 10-15% out of them, our forward line will look a lot more dangerous. So I'm hoping to see him have a game soon where he really just kind of rips it apart and you go, okay, he's here and he's that true kind of small forward, half forward that we're looking for. So those are probably the three that I'm still kind of got questions over.
Yeah, no, fair. With Stevenson, I think his defensive efforts have improved a lot, but he's not the same player that, was the first year at Collingwood. He hasn't shown any of that since pretty much his first year of AFL football. And I was certainly hoping there'd be glimpses of that when he first came to the club. Like, I think there's a role for him. And he did okay against West Coast, kept a couple of important goals. But, yeah, he probably – look, do you think half forward is his best position? I mean, he showed signs in the half-back line last year that he can use the football quite well and set up from behind the ball. And they've gone away from that, which is fair enough. We've got better defenders than him at the moment. But do you think half forward is his best position?
I really do. I think that's where he can – probably unleash his skills more. There were a few nervy moments last year when he played off halfback, and I still don't think he quite has the engine to play in the middle. So that kind of leaves him at half forward, and I think that's a role that he can fill nicely for us, but he's just not consistent enough. And I think that was what frustrates me. And maybe myself and a few other North fans are stuck in the past, but he's still that player that we recruited from Collingwood in his first year there where he won the Rising Star. Maybe I'm still deluded in thinking that's what he can bring to the table, but I don't feel like that talent just disappears. I just don't think he's able to provide that anymore, which is really disappointing because I still think he's got the talent there.
Yeah, we've seen that game against West Coast, wasn't it, a couple of years ago, where he absolutely tore it up. But we haven't seen that often enough. Like, he won us the game against West Coast a couple of years ago. We got 37 touches going through the midfield. I think he kicked three goals as well or something like that. And, yeah, we just haven't seen that consistent enough. I know forward line, it is a very tough position to play. Half forward and forward pocket, you kind of rely on the players up the field to give you opportunities, but sometimes you've got to make your opportunities as well. And yeah, Curtis Taylor, there's a lot of people on social media calling for him to get dropped after last week. Probably wasn't his best game. I don't think it was that horrible, but he wasn't brilliant. But yeah, we want an extra 10% from him this week, that's for sure. And yeah, Aiden Bonner, I think we talked off air, he seems to get matchups against players that are either too tall for him or too strong for him. And it looks like it's going to happen again tomorrow night, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes. I feel sorry for him in some ways because I just don't think that he is being played in the right position. So it'll be a big challenge for him. Dean, I've got a question for you. Are you surprised that Aaron Hall hasn't been selected in any of the senior teams for the first four rounds of the season?
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been even an emergency. I thought he might have been a bit of a dark horse for round one. Obviously, there was a little bit of concern about, his hamstring issues and so forth. But I think with the emergence of Harry Sheasel behind the ball, they probably don't feel like they need another running, creating defender, I guess. We can just give the ball to Sheasel. Jack Zeeble's been very good in that role, like you said before. So I don't know if there's a role for him in that back six. I mean, who would you take out if you're going to, if you're going to put him in, I guess, is my question back to you.
Yeah, that's a good point. Whether or not we put Sheasel in the forward line and had Hall off half back. And we know Josh Goda surprisingly got dropped for the Good Friday clash. And when I saw Goda was out, I thought, oh, Hall must be back in. But they haven't gone for that like running sort of half back. So I was a bit surprised by that. But yeah, it's a good point. I feel like he's probably missing out due to Jack Zeeble's presence down there potentially. And obviously we have Core as well. So I think he's been playing really well in the VFL. So maybe it's probably career over for him if he's not getting selected at this stage.
Yeah, he hasn't been emergency and probably doesn't look like it at this stage. I mean, you've got the, Miller Bergman's been very good as well in the first three rounds. Yes. Probably holding him back as well. There's a number of others. So, yeah, I just don't think there's a role for him at the moment. Look, if injuries happen, I'm sure he'll get his opportunity because, he does add value in the fact that he runs and creates. My problem with him is he can try and bite off more than he can chew, and he can be prone to the odd turnover as well. He can, butcher the ball sometimes just by trying to take too much. So, but he does, I think he got the record for meters gained in the game last year. I think it was something ridiculous like 1,200. So, we'll wait and see on that one. Now, it's great to have you on the show because you are a draft expert, it's fair to say. George Wardlaw, I've watched two VFL games of him and he looks a goods to me. How good do you believe this kid can be? Like, how high do you think his ceiling is?
How good, Dean? How good? He genuinely looks like a mini Ben Cunnington, doesn't he? Just the way he moves and his ability to kind of burst through traffic and get the handball out. The fact that he has had so many injuries over the course of his junior career and setbacks also shows the type of character he is to then get back. The fact he's played only a handful of VFL games and on the weekend, he just looked dominant. I think he got the four coaches' votes in that game and looked really good. He can go forward and hit the scoreboard, which we've seen, but it's just his presence in the middle. Even as a junior, he just looked like a man playing amongst boys. He's got that sort of body shape and he just bullies the opposition, really. His hunt on the man is great. He's got really high tackle numbers. He certainly knows how to find the footy and distribute it, particularly by hand, really well. So we've got a beauty there. I don't expect him to really come in and dominate games like Harry Sheasel necessarily, because I think Wardlaw's a pure midfielder. I don't think you'd see him in a role like Sheasel. I could be wrong. Clarkson could have something up his sleeve, but he's certainly that sort of pure spread midfielder that will be playing a lot of games for our footy club and exciting us by dishing off to the outside players and taking opponents on himself. And the fact that he's still recovering from injury and he's putting that sort of performance in the VFL tells me that he's hungry and he really wants to get into the AFL team soon. And when he makes his debut, I think you, I, and many of the other North fans will think to ourselves, we actually, Sheasel and Wardlaw, I mean, that's sort of generational draft picks there for us.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, like, I watched, like, if I watched his first six quarters and I thought, his weakness is probably he doesn't get enough ball on the outside. In the second half last week, he started getting the ball on the outside. I'm thinking, geez, he doesn't have much going against him. And this is, you know, like you said, he's had a lot of injuries last couple of years, mainly problems with his hamstrings. And they've, you know, the club have sort of said that, you know, we've had to increase his core strength so he gets a lot more strength in his glutes and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, which is, yeah, they've been very slow and methodical, which Alistair Clarkson is really good with that. I mean, he turned Sean Burgoyne's career around and got longevity out of him. So, yeah, no, he's a very exciting talent. I'm going to throw you a hard one. Who's going to have the better career? Is it going to be him or the guy that left us for Port Adelaide?
Oh, you know my answer on this one, Dean. George Wardlaw all the way, all the way.
Yeah, I haven't noticed he's been jogging after someone with defensive efforts either, so or standing in the spot. So when
very
someone
different runs, players, I think George loves hunting the man and really putting in those second efforts where we've already seen Jason not doing that at Port. So different players in that aspect for sure.
Yeah, 100%. Also, I want to talk to you about this year's draft. And there's a lot of talk about Harley Reid, the projected number one pick for this year's draft. He's very, very highly rated. In case Port win the wooden spoon, because we won't be, how good is he?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we don't want to win the spoon and we're certainly death riding Port Adelaide this year. It's certainly not a bad year to land last, just in terms of how good Harley Reid is and has been in his bottom age year as well. He's so dominant across all three areas of the ground, which is what makes him so impressive. So he's a midfielder, but he can win the ball in the air. He's great on the ground. He has great physicality in the contest, even though he's a slight build, and he's certainly living up to the hype of that number one pick mantle. I think it's like Horn Francis in his draft year, and we remember it was almost like he was the one, and similar to Harley Reid, I think he's calling for the number one pick just due to how good he was as a 17-year-old, and he started his season in the NAB League this year just as well. So he's got all areas of his game in great shape. Just in terms of this year's draft, I mean, I think all of us can agree that we're probably looking for another forward or another a tall, whether that's a forward or a key defender, more than likely. This draft in particular have a lot of high quality tall forwards and tall defenders in the early part of the draft. So that's something that we've got to keep our eyes on. And hopefully we're not landing too far near the bottom of the ladder, but there are high quality talls that we can certainly look at the end of the year when the draft rolls around. A lot of them from interstate, which always poses a risk considering we are a Victorian team, but there are high quality talls which we haven't seen necessarily across the last few drafts that are available this year.
Yeah, well, that sounds good because we probably, in all seriousness, I think, yeah, you're probably looking at Port, North Melbourne, probably between that 5 and 10 range for draft picks. Yeah. So, yeah, no, it'll be good if we can nab another key forward to help out and, yeah, even a key defender. Support Ben McKay. Hopefully he signs a long-term deal. And Aiden Core and Griffin Logue as well. So, yeah, no, I think that's probably the area that we probably need to work on now. And maybe even small forward would be nice as well, a genuine small forward. Now, Siobhan, we'll move forward. How did you see the game on Saturday?
I mean, I've had some time to digest it. I'm glad you didn't ask me that question after the game because losing sucks. And we had two wins in a row and we obviously won two games for the year before. So it felt really crappy to lose. But upon further reflection, I think Hawthorn played us really well. You mentioned before the fact that they kind of took possession and control of the game away from us. I also think that they were probably a little bit hungrier. We looked a bit flat. I don't know if you agree with
that.
Yeah, I agree. We kind of started performing really well when it was just a little bit too late. So the first half was disappointing, and then we came to life in the third, and then I think by the fourth, we just ran out of petrol tickets. So it was disappointing to lose because we'd actually got so close. Zerha kicked the goal and we got within 3 points and we thought, here we go. But yeah, it was a strange game. I don't know how to really describe it other than I think Hawthorn just learned how to play us really well. And without LDU and Simpkin in the midfield, I do think we really struggled out of that area of the ground. I don't think Phillips was quite ready to take on the responsibility of being one of the main ball winners out of there. So yeah, we had a few players that were down, and that just accumulated to the loss. But I think, yeah, we can take a lot away from the fact that, yeah, we just kind of didn't show up in the first half. I know that sounds a bit harsh, but I think that kind of was the difference in the game.
Yeah, I mean, their back six is probably the strongest part of their team, and they really dictated terms in the back half. Scrimshaw, CJ, particularly, first half, I think he had 19 touches. We quietened him in the second half. Sicily, and there's one other, Hardwick as well, that really controlled the tempo of the game. I mean, they're very highly skilled players. They were hitting targets. And like you said, we were just a bit off. You know, we weren't pressing up high enough. We were just zoning off, being a bit lazy possibly, and they really, took advantage of it. Second half, I was really impressed that we were able to fight back and make a contest, because you'd have to agree that this time last year, when we were in this situation, we'd go on and lose by 8 to 10 goals, wouldn't we?
That's true. Absolutely. I think the resolve and the willingness to get back in the contest was really impressive. And something that stood out to me, though, again, Dean, is I think we get carved up by opposition small forwards. For Tyler Brockman, who didn't even start the season in Hawthorn's side, he looked like he was ready to kick 5 or 6. And I think that sort of area of the ground as well was a bit shaky. And when we're not winning the ball out of the midfield as well as we have been the last sort of the first two rounds of the season, the defence looks even more kind of shaky. So that was an area that did concern me a little bit in terms of not being able to match up well on their smalls. But in saying that, we got back in the game, and I thought, like you said, that was impressive, because in seasons gone by, I think we would have let that one slip by a big margin.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you mentioned the midfield. What did you make of the sub of Greenwood in the third quarter? I was surprised, because we lost our last 17 clearances, 15-2, and not having LDU and Jai in the team, we needed another clearance player, and he is a clearance player, isn't he? Like, that's his main strength.
It was so strange, Dean. I mean, who am I to judge Alistair Clarkson? I mean, I'm just a couch kind of critic. I was really surprised, and I'm even more surprised that he's not playing in the Good Friday match. I'm not sure what he's done wrong to lose his spot in the team. And like you said, that's a really interesting stat that we lost the last 17 centre bounces, because he is a critical player in that area. I was rapt they brought Darcy Tucker on, and I'm also really happy he's playing in the Good Friday match, starting in the team, because I think he'll bring a lot. He's a great player. But yeah, Greenwood was really surprising at the time, and even more surprising is not playing tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll have to get to Marnie Collins' thoughts on that. She talked him up a couple of weeks ago, so maybe jinxed him a little bit. All right, Siobhan, Daniel Howe. We haven't talked about him. I did see the tweets exchanged between you and Marnie last week. What didn't you like about his game? Because a lot of people didn't. He's on 98 career games. He's been dropped. Do you think he gets to 100 this year at the club?
I do. I'm not saying that Clarkson has favourites, but I was really confused as to why he played last week after his performance as the sub, or really he played nearly the whole game against Frio. That was strange that he played at all. And I'm just confused by his role. So after I very frustratingly said that I didn't think he deserved his spot in the team, he played okay. He was actually a lot better in the second half than he was in the first. But I think he makes too many mistakes. I also think that he doesn't necessarily have a role. He just kind of appears and kind of makes a clangor and you're like, what are you doing? I'm not sure what value he brings to the team. So I'll counteract that with someone like Kane Turner, who I didn't think deserved a spot in the team at the start of the year. But I can see his value now just in what he does in terms of his pressure acts and little moments in the game, where I'm still not sure what value Daniel Howe's bringing to the team. He gets his hands on the ball occasionally, but he's not someone that I can really trust with the ball. Like I said, I'm still struggling to know what his role is. Where's he playing and what he's doing?
Yeah, I mean, you're not the only one who thinks like that. Social media was going off. If you typed in Daniel Howe, you would have found a lot of tweets about him last week, in the first half in particular. I think he was playing half back on the wing. You talked about Alistair Clarkson and not having favourites. I think Daniel Howe is a bit of a favourite because I think this is the player he is. I don't think he's changed and become a worse player. I think at Hawthorn he was very similar. I talk to a Hawthorn mate and he said, no, you'll butcher the ball. He's not a favourite of him. And the Hawthorn supporters used to get stuck into him at games as well. So, yeah, I think Clarkson sees something in him. I'm not too sure what it is. A lot of people are sort of asking, why is he getting a game ahead of a Lockie Young, who seems to have fallen out of favour at the moment? So, yeah, it's interesting. So, obviously, being dropped this week, he might be the sub again. I'm not too sure. Sure. We'll move on to another player. You put out a tweet about Will the Thrill Phillips. Had big shoes to fill in last week, like you said, with no LDU and Simpkin, and had our most centre bounce attendances for the game with 17. 16... touches for the game, which isn't bad. Only one clearance, though. How do you see his career progressing? Like, he's obviously had a bad bout of glandular fever last year. Had a couple of bouts of that. How do you see him anyway?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, Dean. And kind of the point of the tweet was, I saw a lot of people that were very critical and others that were extremely positive, and I'm probably in the middle. I think it's too early to pass judgment and say he's going to be a star, he's going to be a dud. We don't know because there's such a small sample size. I think he didn't quite take his opportunity against Hawthorn when it presented itself. I'm not saying that I expected him to come out and be exactly like LDU and win a game off his own boot, but I still think that he's very raw and probably needs more game time. The one query I have is that he is small, and at his size, you either have to be a really great kick, elite with your hands, or a really great decision maker. And I may be going too early, but we've got to find out which one he kind of is elite in. I was very critical of LDU up until about 2 years ago, and look what happens. I think mids, just like talls, do take time, and we have seen some good signs from Will, but I would like to see him continue to progress each game that he plays. He was at pick 3. Would we be having this sort of discussion if he was lower in the draft? Potentially not, but as a pick 3, over the next few rounds, I'd like to see him continue his progression. But in saying that, he has had injury interrupted under-18s years. He's had the glandular fever. He's had a lot of issues that have come up that's prevented him from really progressing through his career. So the only thing we can do is continue to put games into him and just hope that as time goes on, he continues to kind of show why he was such a high draft pick.
Yeah, no, look, all fair points. And when you put the tweet out last week, you weren't being, you're just asking questions to the North Melbourne supporters. So, you've got to put that, and people have got to put that in context. You just want to know, you just wanted to know where he's at. Yeah, I mean, I guess the one thing is that we don't know what he's excellent at, like if he's got a really high skill. Like his foot skills can be all right, like he hits targets, short passes. He's not overly quick, like you said. He's very small. I think I'm certainly hoping that he becomes a very smart footballer and he can use his skills that way. But he's got George Wardlaw you know, LDU, Simpkin, Ben Cunnington. There's a lot of midfielders there, isn't there?
Very true. And I think where my concern for Will lies is that if Wardlaw comes in and he is playing really well, then you've got Simpkin, Cunnington, LDU, Wardlaw. Where does Will fit into that mix? We knew from the start that LDU had certain elite traits, like his burst away from stoppage, his kind of big body frame, all that sort of stuff. And same with Wardlaw. So clearly we're not going to give up on him, but we've got such a wide range of midfielders now. I'm hoping that he can kind of cement his spot and go, this is where I belong. But with the inclusion of Wardlaw potentially, does it squeeze Will out? Like where does he fit in the team? I'm not sure if you kind of agree, Dean, but do you see him getting a regular game for the rest of the year if Wardlaw does come in?
Probably not, because he's got Tom Powell as well. And Tom Powell's a better player than him at this stage. And that makes him – you can't have too many midfielders. And he's probably – he might be a player that might have to find a role outside of midfield where he goes in the midfield, whether that's like a half-forward flanker or something like that. But the problem is he doesn't have great pace, I guess. So it's going to be interesting to see what progresses throughout the course of the year. I think, you know, a lot of people were getting a bit carried away with his pre-season form and were a bit surprised he didn't get picked in round one, like he was a sub and then got dropped for round two. But, I mean, there's just players in front of him that are better at the moment. That happens. Hopefully he can progress to the player that we want him to be. But, we'll have to wait and see over the course of the year. Like you said, we want to get games into him, and hopefully he can get, you know, 15, 16 games into him this year. And he seems like a really good kid, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's someone with really high character. I think he loves the club and wants to see us win games and go forward. So I wish nothing but the absolute best for him. And fingers crossed he can get all elements of his game firing and he can cement the spot in the midfield. Because for a pick three, we do want him to succeed. It's just there are some little queries that I have at the moment.
Yeah, 100%. If it was like Charlie Lazaro's pick, you wouldn't be questioning anything, would you? Like Charlie Lazaro was a pick in the 30s that's playing the reserves and you know, no one talks about him and stuff like that. Whereas if Will Phillips was a pick in the 20s or 30s, you'd probably be thinking, oh, well, he's going all right. So, yeah, it's always that expectation that comes with a top draft pick that they're going to be, you know, 250-game players and so forth. And we certainly hope we can get that with Will. It would be a shame if we didn't mention this kid too, Harry Sheasel. I mean, how good is this kid?
Oh, Dean, I haven't seen anything like it before for our club. He's a star. I haven't seen someone come into the game with such composure and smarts. Like he's come in and it's like he's played 200 games. I mean, the toe poke against Frio summed everything up you need to know about Harry Sheasel. Like he's so smart, he can think quickly, his skills are elite, he brings others into the game. And what was so impressive in our loss to Hawthorn was the fact that Harry Sheasel, I felt, was the one that brought us back into the game in the third quarter. Like he's electric. And wait till he goes into the forward line. Like, we've only seen him playing off half-back, where he's getting his confidence up, getting a lot of touches. He's actually the steadying ship back down there for us as well. But the fact that he's going to play forward at some point and provide even more of a spark in there, I mean, we wish we could just clone him, don't we, and just have one of him in all areas of the ground. He's a real star, this guy, and he's a long-term player for us that, yeah, you can now – Clarkson's added the fact he can play in half back into his arsenal, and yeah, he's a star. I think he will win the Rising Star, and I get so excited talking about him. I'm kind of lost for words now at how he has been.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very much a Nick Daicos, you know, similar sort of type of player to him in that half-back line. Like, like you said, three games in, he's 18 years old. I mean, it's just crazy to think that. And you kind of, like, you watch him and you kind of expect it now. You've got to remember that he's 18 years old. But I expect him every time he gets a ball that he's going to hit a target. He's going to hit someone up. And like you said, he got us back in the game that third quarter. He had 17 touches in the second half after a little bit of a quiet first half. But, yeah, no, he was never out of the game. Do you see him in the next couple of years even progressing to the midfield as well? Like, I know we talked about Will Phillips and all the players he has to get in front of. Could he be a possibility to go in the midfield as well?
Absolutely. I mean, when he was playing for the Sandringham Dragons in his under-18 year last year, they predominantly had him as a forward. And the fact that we used pick three on him, the query in my mind was always pick three for a kind of like a high half forward. But then in his later games at Sandringham, he played in the midfield. And you thought, hang on a minute. He's great in the midfield. He can really dominate in there. So, absolutely, I think he'd be one of those players where he's a weapon no matter where you put him on the ground. I don't think he'll play permanently in the midfield, but certainly in bursts we can see what he's capable of there.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it could be a possibility, you know, as soon as next year that we've got to try and win a game. Let's just put him in there for, you know, 10 minutes, like you said, and see what he can do, I guess. But we can sit here and talk about Harry Sheezer for the next 2 hours, to be honest with you, and I'll be happy to do that. But I don't know if the listeners, or maybe the listeners would enjoy that. So, yeah, we'll move forward anyway. We've got a game this week, Carlton tomorrow night. It's pretty much our grand final, I feel like, for this year, unless we actually get in the grand final, which I don't think will happen. Now, no Griffin Logue, which hurts a lot. Are we a chance tomorrow night?
Do you want me to? I'll say it. I don't think so. I've obviously, my dad's a Carlton supporter, and I'm a mad North Melbourne supporter. So it is at the grand final in my household. So this is a game that certainly is very close to my heart in my household. But unfortunately, with Griffin Logue out, I just think that the two big guys up forward in Mackay and Curnow, if they get any sort of decent supply out of the middle, and I mean, Carlton do have a really strong midfield as well, Cripps, Kennedy, Hewitt. I mean, they've got a lot of really good players out of there. So if they get any sort of decent supply, I just worry about how the likes of Cor, Bonner and Al Mack and Jack will hold up. So the objective for tomorrow really is win the ball out of the middle and hope that our forwards can beat Carlton's defenders, because I fear when it goes in there that the scoreboard will run away from us really quickly. I hope we're competitive. Clearly, like you said, this is our marquee game. This is the fixture that all eyes are on us. It looks like it's going to be a sellout. It's going to be on free-to-air TV. It's our, you know, it's our only Friday game of the year. So all eyes are on us to perform. Do I think we win? No. Do I think we're competitive? I really hope so. But if you just look at the players that we have not there in Mackay and Logue, they're probably the two players we could actually least afford to have out. So let's just hope that our midfielders get on top. If that's the case, I'd say that we're going to be really competitive. But I fear that, yeah, it may go the other way if there's enough supply in there.
Yeah, I mean, is that how you think we can exploit them, just by dominating the midfield? I mean, we're going to have a very strong midfield tomorrow. Carlton still don't have Sam Walsh. They haven't been great the first few rounds. Last week, they were, I mean, I guess you could say they were a little lucky, but they didn't do themselves any favours by not kicking straight. Is it just beating them in the midfield, beating them comprehensively? We've got Todd Goldstein, still a very good ruckman in the competition. And, yeah, obviously relying on pressure up the field, through the midfield, to make sure that there's no clear one-on-one opportunities for Curnow and Mackay.
You know, I'm actually probably underselling our forwards, to be honest. I mean, Nick Larkey did kick 7 on Jacob Weidering a few years back, and I think we do match up on Carlton really well. There's a team that haven't traditionally beaten us by a comprehensive margin. So I do agree with what you said. I still think we're going to need to really dominate out of the midfield and give our forwards good supply. But we have enough firepower in there now, I think, to actually kick quite a few goals. If Larkey can combat Weidering and Paul Curtis gets off the chain and Zerha has a good game, and like we spoke about earlier in the podcast, if Comben can exploit his matchup potentially on Lewis Young, then we're a chance. And I think our midfield is very solid. We'll get Jai Simkin and Luke Davies-Uniac back. And I'm sure Clarko is going to drill home to the boys how important this game is and that we do need to remain competitive. We're talking a little bit off air about the media being quite hungry to potentially jump on us if we're not competitive. So I'm hoping that we are. And yeah, I think the way to do that is probably winning the ball out of the centre and not exploiting, let's say, Charlie Kono and Aiden Bonner one-on-one, because I think I know what will happen in that instance.
Yeah, I think we all know that case. Yeah, it is important that we are competitive, like you said, and we did talk off air about the media being all over us. It's interesting. Are we the most hated club in the media, do you think, at the moment?
Well,
individuals anyway.
Yeah, it's we've exceeded expectations, I think, both from a fan point of view and probably a general public point of view. Like we mentioned earlier, I didn't expect us to be 2-1 at this point. So the fact that there are still people, Caroline Wilson, out there that like to have pot shots at the club for no real reason. I was shocked at the fact that she was critical about Clarkson coaching from the boundary, because I can guarantee you he'll be doing that tomorrow and more than likely the rest of the season. I love that. I think that's what makes him such a great coach. So to answer your question, I do think for whatever reason we're not liked in certain circles of the media. So if we do not show up and at least put in a competitive performance, I fear for what may come of that in terms of our stake in the Good Friday game. So I think it's very important that we at least show up and do our absolute best.
Yeah, 100%. The good news is the presence of our president, Sonia Hood, will be back at the game. Do you think that will give us a bit of a spur, maybe?
Absolutely. She's a superstar, isn't she? Cancer-free, very good news. I mean, it puts life into a bit of perspective. I think tomorrow puts life into a bit of perspective as well. I mean, it's a footy match. It's important for our club. But get around the Royal Children's Hospital appeal and how good that Sonia Hood's cancer-free and will be at the game. She's a superstar of a person as well as a president. So I think the boys knowing she's up in the stands will probably give them an extra boost as well.
I don't think I've seen a president cop as much as she has in the last 12 months. And just to sum it up, in the last couple of months, to get a breast cancer, which is quite scary, no matter how what the prognosis is and so forth. Like, I know someone that got it, and before she found out, it already spread through her, and, unfortunately, no longer with us. So, it is a very scary thing. So, if she hadn't been through enough, she had to cop that. But she's very resilient, very strong woman. And I don't think we could find anyone better than her to lead us, to success in the future. And definitely, if you see her, wish her well tomorrow. Definitely. But we'll talk about now. We talked off air about this team change is a little bit surprising. Mm-hmm. The players that are coming in: Aiden Bonner, Jai Simpkin, LDU. I think it's more the outs that are surprising to me. Hugh Greenwood, surprise drop. Josh Goder as well. I thought he was going okay. Daniel Howe, I don't think there's too many surprises with that. And I think a lot of supporters might be happy with that one. And obviously Griffin Logue suspended. What do you make of the changes?
I was really surprised about Goder's omission. I think he's actually been one of the better sort of not a lockdown defender, but kind of running defender. I thought his first three rounds were excellent. Picked up straight from where he left off in the Suns game in round 23. So I was really surprised to see him omitted. But I think I'm a bit shocked about Hugh Greenwood's omission. Now that I've had time to think about it, I can see the potentially bringing in LDU and Simpkin. Clarkson didn't want to be too mid-heavy, and especially like kind of inside mid-heavy with Cunnington in the team as well. But I would have thought that Hugh Greenwood would potentially have even played some sort of defensive role on Patrick Cripps. I mean, he's clearly Carlton's key in the midfield. He had 42 touches last week, so he's the key driver out of there. So I was surprised, because going into the game, I thought Greenwood will probably keep tabs on Cripps. So for him to get omitted, I was really surprised. But clearly LDU and Simpkin come straight back in. The other query I have is, where's Callan Dawson at? Because in my view, I would have picked Callan Dawson over Aiden Bonner. I think Dawson has extra height and probably a bit more stockiness to take on a key forward. He's a pure sort of key defender. If he's not getting selected for this game where we are depleted of key defenders, when is he actually going to get a game? Because I think he would have been perfect to play on one of the two big talls. And don't forget that De Koning is probably going to rest forward at some point as well. So really surprised to see him not in the team. I'd be interested in your thoughts, Dean, on where you think Callan Dawson's career is at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, he looked all right in the reserves last week. Like, I watched the full game in reserves, and I thought he was quite good. Aiden Bonner played well as well, full career. I thought they might both would have maybe come in. Like you said, DeConey would go forward. And if he goes forward, I don't know who their third tall defender is, to be honest with you. I'm trying to look through the list now, and I'm not too sure. Maybe Jack Zeeble will have to be the third tall defender, and you know he's not exactly tall. Similar to Aiden Bonner, about 190 centimeters. Who takes Goda's spot in the back as a rebounding defender? I'm a bit surprised by that one. Like you said, I'm just trying to look, and I don't see a like for like replacement. Obviously, we've got two midfielders and Bonner come in, but.
I can think of, Dean, is whether or not they play Tucker in that role.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's
what I was thinking. Yeah, I think that's what I see as him in the future. I don't think he's going to get the game in the midfield. I think there's just too many bodies there. I think there's better options in Darcy Tucker in the midfield. I think he plays as a halfback sort of rebounding defender in a mould of a Brent Guerra type, like when he was at Hawthorn. Do you see that, or do you see him somewhere else?
No, I see that. We only got a small glimpse of him, but he did drift forward and kick that crucial goal in the game against Hawthorn. So whether or not he even plays as like a half forward, I think we recruited him to play on the wing. So, but I mean, Bailey Scott takes up one, and we've got others rotating through there as well. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Clarkson uses him in tomorrow's game.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting. Who do you think the sub will be? We've got Greenwood, Goda, Howe and Archer as the subs.
I hope it's not Daniel Howe. I hope it's Greenwood, but to be honest with you, I have a feeling it might be Goda, just to come on and add a bit of run, a bit of fresh legs that he can provide for us. He was stiff to get dropped, so I'd be surprised if he wasn't the sub.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised Jackson Archer got in as a sub. I think it was his first game back last week, or maybe second game, but he didn't get a touch until halfway through the third quarter. And I think he only had two possessions for the game. Well, like, he played okay, did his job, like, competed really well, like an Archer would, but yeah, he didn't. Like, I feel like he needs more, you know, game time in the reserves, but I mean, yeah, I don't know what that means. If he's close to a game, if he's an emergency, I'd have to think so, but I don't think he'll play any. I don't think he'll even be a sub, to be honest with you. I think he's a fourth choice emergency. So maybe I'm reading too much into it. In saying all that, Siobhan, what's your final prediction for the game?
As much as I'd like to collect the Roe Cup in my household and see the Roos have a victory on Good Friday, I do think Carlton will win, and they'll probably win fairly comfortably. I'm hoping comfortably is around 30 points and no more than that. But I just think they've probably got a bit too much firepower for us at the moment. But don't be surprised if our boys put in a really solid performance and challenge them right all the way.
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly showing we're capable. I mean, we knocked over Fremantle in Perth. So, you know, I mean, I think Clarkson's, you know, the type of coach that will come up with a plan that might even surprise Carlton, like Hawthorn did to us last week, particularly in the first half. That we might get a half decent win or something like that. So you never know, I guess. Well, Siobhan, it's been a pleasure. It's been a long time since people have heard you and got your thoughts. Thanks for so much for coming on the show. I'm sure I'll have you on soon once again. Did you want to add anything else before I let you go?
You know, the pleasure's absolutely been all mine, Dean. It's a great honour to be on the podcast. Just to everyone, unfortunately, I won't be able to get to the game tomorrow due to COVID catching me. But it's really important that all North members get down if you can, give what you can to the Good Friday appeal. And hopefully it is a sellout crowd there tomorrow and we can get the boys home. Fingers crossed. Dean, it's been an absolute pleasure to be on hashtag Kangaroos.
No, well, great message towards the end there too, Siobhan. Hopefully we can get a sellout and, you know, 45,000+, I think it'll be good. And hopefully we can put up a good performance. And, you know, you never know. Hopefully we get a win. Well, thanks so much, Siobhan. You have a great night. Rest up. Drink plenty of fluids. Get plenty of sleep. And, support us from the couch tomorrow.
Absolutely, Dean. Go Roos. Fingers crossed we put in a great performance. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
So thank you very much to Siobhan Rowe for coming on the show once again. Always been a big fan of her work on North Talk with Ross Payne over a number of years. So, yeah, it was good to have her on. I'm sure you lovely listeners really enjoyed listening to her thoughts on how the club's going so far. And, yeah, obviously get opinions on certain individual players, positive and negative. But that's what it's all about. So, yeah, no, thank you very much to Siobhan Rowe. And I'm sure I'll have her back on regularly as well. Anyways, that's it for this episode. Once again, thanks for all the likes, retweets, comments you lovely listeners put out on the show. It really means a lot. The show is growing. The downloads are very, very good at the moment. Obviously, I get a lot more people listening when we win, when we seem to win. But, yeah, the downloads are really good. And, yeah, all you listeners are contributing to that. Putting 5-star reviews and 4-star reviews or whatever you want on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. And I think one person reached out to me a week or two ago sort of saying, is it only available on Apple Podcasts? No, it's available on all podcast platforms, you know, whatever you want to listen to. So, yeah, I've even got it on Audible, which is, you know, where you listen to audiobooks. So I even put it on that. So, yeah, if you want to listen to it on that, you can certainly go ahead and do that. So, yeah. Putting out ratings, it's important because every time a person logs into Apple Podcasts, they want to look out for a football content and they see my podcast come up. So, yeah, straight in their search or recommended listen. So, yeah, no, it's really good that you love listeners do that. So keep up the great work there. Anyways, that's it, like I said. So today I will leave a shout-out to Sean Zimmerman at Sean_Zim. Bye for now, and go Roos.